The Crestfallen Rose. Written by Michael Martin. Narrated by Amanda Fellows. For Joy, Kate, and Rachel. As crude a weapon as the caveman's club, the chemical barrage has been hurled against the fabric of life. Rachel Carson, Silent Spring. Chapter 1. Houston, 12:01 a.m., March 15, 2001. Fire leapt into the night air. Sparks crackled and swirled as floating particles of chemicals reached flashpoint. Sweaty men in black coats inhaled oxygen from tanks. Masks covered blistering flesh. Caustic vapors infiltrated the rubber seals. The firefighters retched. Water from 5 trucks arched over their heads. The warehouse exploded. The building collapsed, exposing steel girders. Gases volatilized into the night. Men ran out, waving for water gunners to spray them.
Pull back! Pull back! Get the hell out of there! Let it burn!
Chief Fire Marshal Edward Hurst ran to the blaze, bullhorn in hand, barking orders. Floating cotton balls of chemicals cooled in the night air and covered his deep blue parka. A form writhed next to a red brick marker, Chemical Retain Warehouse Number 13. Susie Phelps, his rookie firefighter. Hurst flung the bullhorn to the ground. He cradled her in his arms, then ran. Her long blonde hair fell over his thick hands.
Medic! Medic! Move your ass, now!
An EMS vehicle raced toward the fire marshal, red light flashing. Hurst, carrying his charge in one arm, yanked open the rear door and bellowed at the attendant inside.
Trauma center, number 6, radiochemical inhalation. Her lungs may be destroyed. Get a police escort. Move it out. And son?
The attendant glanced at his chief while laying Susie Phelps on a gurney.
Pray. Pray hard.
Hurst returned to the fray to ensure all his men were safely away from the inferno. Near him, on a knoll, a solitary figure held both hands to his mouth, gazing at the erupting flames and chemicals vaporizing into the night. Hurst ran toward him. All he needed was a civilian casualty. The man cried, "My babies! My babies!" The man, thin and gaunt as 80 approached, was well known from news articles.
"Dr. Gessel, you've got to get out of here. It's a chemical rainstorm, sir. Please, come with me."
He reached for Gessel's hand, then hesitated. How did one approach a Nobel laureate? 1 a.m., Rosebud Nursery, Plantation, Florida. The moon illuminated rain-spent clouds, bathing Rosebud's greenhouses. The flowers sensed the light. Petals trembled, and a March breeze wafted the rose's pungent scent into the white clapboard cottage of its owner. Allie Talbot woke, startled. She dreamed of a burning building, laughing skeletons leaping from the fire. She rustled the pillows on her bed, pulled the hem of her red flannel nightgown over her slender hips, and silently cursed. Allie smelled flowers. A once-welcomed fragrance, now guilt's trigger. She heard something. Not again, she thought. The sound repeated, words muffled. Allie sat up in her bed, flipped the covers to the end, hoping the sound would stop. She rubbed her face with both hands, fingers passing over her eyes, nose, and gaunt cheeks. Mommy! Allie leaped to the floor and ran down the hall like a gymnast approaching a vault. Sam? Allie reached through the bed railings, feeling the sheets for her daughter's small form. A pink nightlight on a bedside table shone on the child's blankets. A vase filled with 2 long-stemmed yellow roses stood next to the lamp. She felt the blankets in search for her daughter, then shuffled the pillows, sending them airborne, one of them striking the vase. It thudded against the carpet, petals fluttering across lavender fibers.
Sam! Sam, where are you?
A whimper told her. Allie sank to her knees. She shoved aside the white cotton bed skirt and reached under the bed. Sam was curled toward the foot of the bed. She grasped the child with one hand, then pulled her from under the bed into her arms. She rocked her for a while on her knees. After a few minutes, she moved to the rocker beside the window overlooking the nursery, carrying Sam. Samantha raised her head, eyes open, staring vacantly.
Mommy, it was after me.
Allie cradled her, a baby no longer at just past 3. She heard her short gasps of air and felt the quivering of her lips. She kissed Sam on the cheek while caressing her faultless olive complexion. Sam, there is no it. The child rested her head on her mom's shoulder, rubbing her cheek into the flannel nightgown. Allie ran a hand through Samantha's chestnut curls. The wooden runners of the rocker creaked in tune with the creatures of the night. Allie brushed her child's ear with her lips. Your leg and blankie got tangled in the guardrail. Samantha rubbed her nose against her mom's gown.
I lost Kitty, Mommy. The monster got it.
Allie rose with Sam in her arms, walked over to Kitty, and grabbed it with her free hand. She returned to the rocker and placed the white polyester animal under Sam's arm.
See, Kitty is safe, and so are you. There's no monster, Sam.
Sam pulled Kitty to her chest.
You said there was a monster, Mommy, lots of times. I heard you tell Daddy. You cried a lot.
Allie glanced out the window, the nursery security lights visible in the distance. They illuminated a host of blind mosquitoes swirling in the incandescent light. When she and Alex had argued, she had failed to realize, or at least believe, that blindness is an affliction of sight, not the mind. Allie, too, had nightmares of the monster in the greenhouse she had unwittingly let loose. She exposed her gestating child to a creature that infiltrated her blood, then rode the rich red stream through the umbilical cord into Sam. A soft pink glow from the nightlight on the bedstand table bathed mother and child. Each night, Sam would ask Allie to turn it on. She wondered if a particle of light could penetrate her daughter's world of darkness. The runners of Allie's wooden rocker creaked as they settled into the carpet. Sam flinched, but her breathing remained regular. Holding Sam tight, she rose from the rocker, waiting for Sam to say,
"Rock me, Mommy."
Sam was growing. Her legs came way past Allie's knees. Allie laid Sam in her bed, placed Kitty by her chin, and pulled her favorite pink blankie over her. She turned. The white porcelain vase lay unbroken on the carpet. The pink glow of the nightlight bathed the yellow petals in an eerie glow, a mosaic on the lavender carpet. Allie, on her knees, grasped the petals in her hand, smelled them, stood, and kissed her daughter goodnight on her forehead after blowing aside one of her chestnut curls. Miami, 6 a.m. David King stood on the balcony of the old Miami Bay Hotel, absorbing the 6 a.m. sunrise on Biscayne Bay. His right hand gripped Cuban coffee laced heavily with cream, his left a cigar. An incoming tide caused ripples on the waves. The waters of the bay flowed past channel markers that guided boaters into the Atlantic. A wisp of smoke appeared on the horizon. It came from whale-tail-shaped smokestacks that formed the aft superstructure of the Royal Caribbean superliner, Celebration.